Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Witterbull Show. 704-570-1110 is our phone number to be a part of the conversation. Wonderful to be here with you. And as always, you can follow me on Twitter. That's at Witterbull Show. And, you know, if you want to comment to me, you want to send me a DM, you can DM me. Want to reach out on the Facebook page at the Brett Witterbull Show, you can reach out to me there as well. You know what today is? You know what today is? Today is a very, very important date, and I haven't really seen it mentioned on the news anywhere. I haven't seen it anywhere on the news, and it's one of these things that you would normally say, oh, it's the end finally segment or something like that. Today, this day, in 1945, the Emperor of Japan announced that they were done. They were done. Now, it was not signed until September 2, 1945, the surrender itself. But the surrender of the Empire of Japan was announced by Japanese Emperor Hirohito on 15 August, formally signed on September 2nd, 1945. Now, why do I bring this up? Because in the second hour of the program, we've got a terrific guest who's going to come by. And he's with the Hudson Institute. And we're going to talk about essentially what the surrender in Afghanistan ultimately means 1 year removed. And it's not lost on me that we did something absolutely incredible in an incredibly short period of time in World War II, and that was defeat not just Hitler and the Nazis, the National Socialists of Adolf Hitler, but we also defeated Japanese imperialism. And all it took was a commitment by the American people to say we are going to avenge what it was that took place at Pearl Harbor and in the attacks that followed those in the Philippines and beyond. And we are going to fight for this country. We are going to fight for the American way. Now, do you have any doubt in your mind, given the current culture and especially the cable news media, that you could have that sort of success in a fight in this day and age? With all of the prevaricators and equivocators and those people who just can't stand this country that we live in. Do you think we could pull this off in 2022? I don't doubt the resolve of our military men and women. I don't doubt the resolve of the individual American people. I doubt the elites who got so focused and excited when the pandemic nearly brought us to our knees and who saw crisis as opportunity and all this wonderfulness. Just look at the cable channels. Just look at what's on TV. You need to stop watching the cable news channels, except Newsmax, because I like Newsmax, and I endorse Newsmax. But I'm saying, broadly speaking, they're just trying to freak you out. They don't have any secret information. They're ideological. They'll tell you stuff to torment you or to just make you feel better. It's that simple. My gosh. After Liz Cheney loses tomorrow, let's just shut it down. Don't listen to these people. Even the ones that you consider your friends. Even the ones that you consider your foxy friends. I mean, any of these people. You really, it's not worth your time and effort to consume what they're giving you because they're not giving you anything that you don't already know, that you can't already find out, or any of that sort of stuff. It's not worth it. It's not, the Mar-a-Lago raid is an important story, but it's not the biggest story. It's not the only story. You know the issues. You know what matters. It is inflation. It is crime. It is illegal immigration. These people care nothing about that or what you're dealing with in your lives. These cable channels, and I'm going to explain it to you straight ahead here, because it's really remarkable when you consider where our president and vice president and Congress is. Anybody have any ideas where they're? Well, you know, the president is in Kiowa Island down there in South Carolina. Kamala Harris is on her way to Hawaii. Congress and the senator out of session, which means that I think Karine Jean-Pierre and I'm guessing it's Karine Jean-Pierre and probably Ron Klain are like basically running the American government right now. Everybody's out hanging around, treating life like it's an absolutely normal sort of condition that we're living in right now. And it's not. It's not. We have a number of crises that are facing us. But I want to go back to the surrender after in the face of Japan and World War II and what that meant. What that meant was a country that was sort of a side player in World War I. We did a lot of heavy lifting and we acquitted ourselves quite well in fighting in Europe. But essentially, we were in an internecine fight between European countries. Essentially, we were in the midst of a Hatfields and McCoys kind of fight there over in Europe. But when you get to World War II, America is the arsenal of democracy. America is the place that cannot be reached by any of the hostile powers. And as a consequence, we go from Depression era economics and big government recovery methods all the way to the nuclear age. And it began in December of 1941 and concluded in 1945, in September. Do the math. Less than 4 years, we were able to take down these dragons. And I don't remember ever seeing in any of the newsreels or in any of the videos, people going on radio, writing articles in newspapers saying, America's not that special. America's not that great. Our boys can't do it. And if they can do it, they're war criminals anyways. I never saw a single solitary person do that. Maybe there were some crazed communist leftists in universities spread out around the country, but they're losers anyways. I'm talking about the American people. The American people understand what is strong. The American people understand what is right, and the American people understand that it is the American way or no way forward. The elites don't. Soros, the big European interests, the World Economic Forum, the Great Reset. There's got to be a Great Reset, but it's got to be on America's terms. 704-570-1110, News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. A boomer Von Cannon.
What do you say, Brett?
Man, all I want to do is testify. You know what I'm saying?
That's right, that's right.
I want to have pride in what our grandfathers and great grandfathers did, man.
Absolutely.
So we got to respect.
Yes, sir.
Not a mention on the news.
Not even.
Not even.
Come on, man.
News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. Boomer, how are those running? News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. 704-570-1110. So I don't want to put too fine of a point on this here, okay, folks? But you need to understand the way the coverage of this Mar-a-Lago stuff is happening is by design and it is on purpose. They want you to get demoralized about the issues that really matter. Look at what they keep talking about on every cable news channel. They talk about, is Biden going to run in 2024? Do you care if he's going to run in 2024? Don't you care about what's happening in 2022? Are you already looking to 2024 to get agitated and upset about it? I mean, I look at this and I just shake my head. I look at this and I say, wait a minute. Hold on. Let me give you a great example of this. The camps are set into two groups, okay? You have announcers and you have renouncers. Every cable channel has an announcer on it, and I'm just trying to use that for some basic, easy to understand sort of imagery. So think of whatever anchor or host is on one of these cable channels, and so let's designate them the announcer. Well, almost always, the other half of the equation will be this. You got to have somebody who's a renouncer. Now, what is a renouncer, Brett? The renouncer is the person who reacts to attack the other side of whatever that cable channel is and does it to try to really get you riled up. So if you're on their side, you're like, yeah. And if you're not on their side, you're like, what a jerk. I'm going to give you a great example of this. This is going to be cut number 10. Jim Acosta. I'm not going to make you listen to Jim Acosta. I can't stand Jim Acosta on CNN. I think he's a duplicitous goof. But he's got a guy there named Phil Mudd. Phil Mudd was once upon a time a CIA operative, was once upon a time an FBI agent, and rose highly into the FBI. He was somebody who frequently commented about how Donald Trump was part of Putin's stooges and all that sort of stuff. So, of course, you have the announcer in Jim Acosta say to Phil Mudd, what about this? What about this call by those Republicans now to defund the FBI? You have to listen to the entire answer from Phil Mudd. The most offensive part is the last 15 seconds. Go.
Yeah, I think there's a couple things you need to think about. The first would be threats to American citizens who happen to be FBI employees. If you look at what happened in Cincinnati, and you've seen reports today of armed individuals outside the office in Phoenix, this is a numbers game, Jim. If politicians start to encourage people to commit acts of violence against the FBI, even if you say defund the FBI, there's a violent fringe that will say, I want to take action. There might be...
Hold on. I haven't seen one American politician say do violence against the FBI. So what we're doing right here with Phil Mudd is creating a straw man that you can't even say defund the FBI because defund the FBI is violence. No, it's not. No, it's not. It's not violence at all. But let's continue, Phil.
I want to take action. There might be 0.01% of the fringe who say that means I should commit an act of violence. Man, the FBI is an open organization. I served at both the CIA and the FBI. The CIA was closed. The FBI is open. Those offices are public facilities. Those offices interact with the public. If 0.01% of the population says, I need to commit an act of violence, those people, the FBI employees, are under threat. Let me close with one other issue on defunding.
Here we go.
If you think that state and local police can follow the Iranians, follow the Chinese, follow the Russians, follow one of the most horrific things in America, that is cyber pornography against infants.
Get ready.
If you think they can follow white collar crime, if you think they can follow mortgage fraud, that is not a state and local problem. You may object to what happened in Mar-a-Lago, but if you say defund the FBI, let your kid be abused by an adult. That's what the FBI does. Good luck, Jim.
Are you kidding me? This guy's not a serious human being. Your kid should get abused by an adult if you don't want to see abuses of power inside the FBI? Are you saying that everybody who works at the ACLU or at these left-wing organizations trying to spring people from jail, are you saying that they deserve to have their kids molested? What is wrong? See, this is why you can't watch these shows. I have to absorb them for you, share it with you, and help you to understand why all of this is a hellscape beyond all possible belief. Just say no. Just say no. Just say no. Just say no. Go get your own information. It's not worth it hearing a grown man say a kid deserves to be abused if you want the FBI defunded. That's disgusting. It's disgusting. 704-570-1110, News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. Anna Erickson's got the update. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Witterbull Show. This is coming, folks. This is coming. Listen to this. San Francisco, formerly one of America's great cities, has continued to decline with skyrocketing crime rates, public defecation, and vagrancy across the city. Due to the increasing cost of housing in San Francisco, it now faces a significant homelessness problem, with almost 8% of the city population living on the streets. The city's excellent solution to these problems? They're going to charge you, if you own a home, they're going to charge you $20,000 for each garbage can you have at your house. There is no justifiable reason given for the price tag, but taxpayers should feel reassured knowing that once the trash cans are mass-produced, they will only cost a measly $3,000 per garbage can. Rather than addressing the city's high poverty rate, part of the reason for the rollout of the expensive trash cans is to prevent homeless people from digging in the trash. San Francisco has commissioned a company to make the, quote, perfect trash can to clean up the city streets. And one of the prototypes is costing taxpayers $20,000. Along with the $20,000 model garbage can, the city also commissioned two other prototypes, one costing $19,000 and the other costing $11,000. What takes 4 years and costs more than $20,000? A trash can in San Francisco, reported the Associated Press on Saturday. San Francisco residents will have the opportunity to try out six trash cans and vote on which ones they think are best. The city added three off-the-shelf models after facing outrage over the high cost of their designs. What did they do? They went down to the big box store and just bought like three garbage cans? Said, how about these? These are just regular. Beth Rubenstein, a spokeswoman for San Francisco's Department of Public Works, told the outlet that if one of the more expensive models is chosen, it will cost taxpayers $2,000 to $3,000 each to produce. So they got you a $20,000 trash can. Now, if you pick one of these, it's only going to be $3,000. So let's do government math, boys and girls. Let's do government math. It was $20,000. It's now only $3,000. What does that mean, TJ and Tommy? That means they just saved you $17,000. That's a bargain. Isn't that basically what we just did with the Green New Deal nonsense and the inflation control measures and the stuff that's coming out of Washington, D.C.? Isn't that basically what they just did? Where they go, hey, it was going to be $4 trillion. Now it's merely $730 billion. We're saving you all that money. How does this happen? Serious question. You're intelligent. You understand the way the world works. But how does this happen? Let me give you a little bit of an indication as to where this kind of crazy thinking comes from. California Department of Education is recommending books for K through 12 students that include literature on gender identity, toddlers who are transgender, and a book claiming the founding fathers and Donald Trump are racists. The books include Anti-Racist Baby by Ibram X. Kendi and Ashley Lukashevsky. It Feels Good to Be Yourself, a book about gender identity by Teresa Thorne and Noah Greeny. Stamped for Kids, Racism, Anti-Racism, and You by Jason Reynolds, Ibram X. Kendi, Sonia Cherry Paul, and Rochelle Baker. Why does it not? It feels to me like I'm reading nominations at the Academy Awards. It feels like we're reading nominations for these things. Libs of TikTok exposed these subversive anti-American books that are being pushed by the California educational bureaucrats to kids. Big League Politics has reported on the crazy practices that are happening out in California, and it's got parents concerned. California parents are now speaking out after school teachers brainwashed their 12-year-old child on transgender issues and allegedly called CPS on them for not referring to their child by certain pronouns. So the kid is 12 years old. They talked about transgender issues. The 12-year-old decided they were transgender and then called CPS. That's the Children's Services on the parents because the parents don't want to call the kid those pronouns at home. What? How did this? Go back to my opening commentary about the fact that we were able to beat the Nazis and Japanese militarism, and it would only take another 40 years to defeat the menace that is the Soviet Union. Look at the challenges we are facing right now. Do you think Xi Jinping, well, I'm sorry, she, he, they, whatever his pronouns are, I don't want to be judgmental on Xi Jinping. He can be whatever pronouns, they can be whatever, they can be whatever pronouns they want to be. Do you think that they're doing this over there in the People's Republic of China, the Communist Chinese Party? Do you think they're sitting around going, the Americans are getting very aggressive in this part of the world. Let's work on pronouns. The Americans must be taught a lesson. Let us first, though, begin composting our own waste for usage in our gardens. You think about what it is that we're focusing on, and it's as if all of America is being punked. Can you do math? Can't do math. How far behind are you with the COVID shutdowns? About 3.5 years. Kids that are in sixth grade are really functioning at a high third grade level at this point because of all the shutdowns and the lockdowns and the restorative justice programs that are going on in the schools. But let's go ahead and just focus on this instead. We're going to call the authorities on the parents because the kid told us the parents wouldn't call him by the right pronouns. How do we know that the parents didn't call him by the right pronouns? Maybe the kid hates their parents. Maybe the kid lied. It's been known to happen. The Epoch Times obtained recordings of public school teachers cackling about how they use a, quote, equality club under false pretenses to push them towards the beliefs they want them to have. Now, you think about this. This is the weaponizing of children. This is the weaponizing of childhood. And these are the folks that are going to grow up and are going to be tasked with doing incredible things. Incredible things. Like going to Mars or inventing something incredible. And at the end of the day, because of what these radical teachers are teaching these kids, rather than giving them the skills to do math and algebra and calculus and to understand art and argument and rhetoric and all these sorts of things, they're going to be totally qualified to go protest outside of a Supreme Court justice's house or stand in front of the Supreme Court and cry at the justices. Heck of a job, AOC. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WVP. Boomer Von Cannon.
Yes, sir.
They're going to pull into the driveway of the Supreme Court Justice's house, and they're going to put on the Alanis Morissette, and they're going to cry at him. Crying. Are we driving and crying this afternoon? News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. 704-570-1110. Defund the police advocate Ilhan Omar's city experiences sharp increases in a majority of crimes, data shows. Now, remember, crime is a huge issue that cuts across the spectrum. It doesn't matter. There are not just crimes confined to this neighborhood or that neighborhood. Crime, if it's out of control in a city, everybody is going to be affected. Businesses, retirees, young people, old people, you name it. Well, Ilhan Omar's city, that would be Minneapolis, is experiencing a sharp increase in most crimes. The spike comes just 1 year after she backed a failed campaign to dismantle and replace the Minneapolis Police Department. Omar represents Minnesota's 5th Congressional District, which encompasses the city of Minneapolis. So far this year, citywide crimes have spiked in 9 of 14 categories over the same time period last year. It's a case study in what happens when municipal leaders decide to demonize the police and criminal justice system for their political advantage. As in many other big cities, homicides and other violence spiked in the city following the murder of George Floyd and rise of the Defund the Police movement, a movement to which Minneapolis uniquely capitulated. How bad is it? Well, following Floyd's death, in 2020, May of 2020, remember that horrible day, and we remember that horrible video that we all saw, and it's disgusting what was done to George Floyd. The violent crime skyrocketed. Last year, the city fell one murder short of hitting its all-time high of 97 homicides. 97 homicides. And while murders have declined this year, many other crimes are trending in the opposite direction. Crime has risen in 9 of the 14 categories maintained on the city government website. Minneapolis motor vehicle theft up 32%. Larceny and theft up 30%. Carjackings up 21%. Can you imagine if you lived in a city that had a 21% increase in carjackings? Would you want to go into town? Destruction of property up 13%. Assaults 12%. And as in many other big cities, loosening of COVID restrictions has extended the increase in violent crime to an increase in some categories of property crime. Now, last year, far-left activists spearheaded an effort to dismantle the Minneapolis Police Department and replace it with a, quote, Department of Public Safety. The activists successfully placed the charter amendment on the November ballot. The effort received outside support from deep-pocketed liberal donors and groups. George Soros' Open Society Policy Center paid $500,000 to push the campaign to get Minneapolis to get rid of the police department. Now, how does that benefit George Soros or people suffering at the hands of criminals? How does that benefit them? I don't know. No idea. Terry, welcome to the show.
Hey, Brent.
What's going on, Terry?
Oh, I just want to say that you're the best voice in Charlotte since Rush Limbaugh.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you. That's very nice of you.
You really are. I did have a lot of parodies today, Matt.
Yes, sir.
So I got a little parody if you're ready for it.
Okay, let's hear it.
I left my trash in San Francisco and went south to San Diego. Hey, Jim. I have to pay an affordable trash pickup, but I think that the garbage trucks miss the trash that's collecting in Sacramento.
Whoa. Ladies and gentlemen, Terry, great stuff.
Okay, man.
All right, thanks. I mean, you know, San Francisco was a once beautiful city. And then the 1960s hit. And it just got weird. I've never been in a city like it where it has its own smell. It actually has its own stank. It's kind of like wharf smell plus filth plus decadence. It's like going into a frat house that's been locked up all summer with no air conditioning on, and you open the doors, it goes, whoa. You know that scene in the Indiana Jones movie, Raiders of the Lost Ark? You know the face-melting scene? Very much like that. It's very much like that. It's remarkable. By request from Terry, News Talk, 1110 993 WBT.
I left my heart in San Francisco.
Hour number two, now underway, 704-570-1110. It's great to be here with you. We're going to be joined by a very special guest coming up at in the next segment, talking about the legacy of what it was that happened in Afghanistan a year ago. And lessons learned and, of course, opportunities lost. You're going to want to stick around for that. I'm looking forward to the conversation. The J.P. Morgan CEO is Jamie Dimon. Jamie Dimon. Once upon a time, he was sort of floated out there as a possible presidential candidate. I think he would probably be a Democrat if he were going to run for office. But he's been talking to wealthy clients and was having a conversation with these wealthy clients and talking about sort of the direction the economy is going. Here's what he said, and this is how far out of the mainstream the president, vice president, the Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, how far out of the mainstream that they now are, okay? He talked to them about climate change and the odds of a recession. He said U.S. natural gas production does not conflict with the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. He said this on the call with these big, heavy-duty investment people. J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon said this past week that U.S. natural gas production doesn't conflict with long-term emission reduction targets. We should focus on climate. The problem with that is because of high oil and gas prices, the world is turning their coal plants back on. It's now dirtier, he said in a call. Why can't we get it through our thick skulls that if you want to solve climate change, it's not against climate change for America to boost more oil and gas? J.P. Morgan Chase was ranked as the world's top fossil fuel financier in a report published by the environmental groups last year, who said the bank contributed a total of $317 billion to the industry between 2016 and 2020. The bank has pledged to achieve net zero emissions throughout key sectors of its financing portfolio by 2050. Okay, good luck. Natural gas produces half the carbon dioxide compared to burning coal and has played an important role in reducing the U.S. overall CO2 emissions since 2007. However, climate scientists told Reuters that the oil and gas industry is growing at a rate incompatible with the goal of limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius. So he says national security demands energy security for ourselves and our allies overseas, noting that using gas to diminish coal consumption is an actionable way to reduce CO2 emissions expeditiously. But they don't want to hear it because this is not about science. This is about religion. This is a religion that you're watching. You are looking at a state church, which is the federal government, forcing $730 billion into sectors as tithing. That is the tithing. If you look at the way the government is set up, it's very much like a church. Joe Biden is the current pope of the climate church, right? He's got Nancy Pelosi, and he's got Chuck Schumer, and he's got AOC. And these are the radicals that are in charge of making sure that you follow the orthodoxy or you get canceled. Jamie Dimon is a big player. He's a huge player with a giant bank. He talks to more people than anybody in the White House does. He understands it, and he's trying to make it work. Jim, you're my first caller this hour. Welcome to the show, Jim.
Yes, you haven't lived till you're named in an homage in one of Terry's parodies.
Hey, Jim!
As Einstein said, true dat.
Yes, it's like when Leonard Skinner mentioned Neil Young. It's great. It's great to be considered.
Yes.
So the raid on Mar-a-Lago.
Oh, gosh.
Now, they're not calling it a raid. They're calling it a vigorous search. Right? So they've modified their vernacular.
They have.
Because everybody is perturbed by the entire process of what they engaged in.
And do you know what the fundamental problem was with that entire problem to begin with? Do you know what it was? It's the fact that the people who concocted the fake story about Trump and the Russians were never held to account. Nobody went to jail. Nobody got fired. Nobody lost their opportunities. Nobody lost their security clearances. And that ultimately is the problem. That's why people are so mad about this. I don't know anybody who hates the FBI as an institution. The FBI is a necessary policing institution. They've had very, very, very bad histories inside that organization, okay? You go back to the J. Edgar Hoover days. You go back to the wiretapping of Martin Luther King, the bugging of Martin Luther King Jr., all of that sort of stuff. And that was a terrible thing. COINTELPRO, a terrible thing. Trying to, you know, infiltrate anti-war groups and things like that in the 60s. Those are all terrible things. Those are all terrible things. But until the FBI and Chris Wray and Merky Garland understand that you have got to be held to account for the sins you committed, you cannot be absolved. You have got to acknowledge you have a problem. And if you want to do January 6th hearings, fine, do your January 6th hearings. You've done them. The American people know exactly where they stand on that issue. Let's do FBI hearings. Let's do a decade of decadence. I'm sorry, that's an album. That's another album entirely. I think that was Duran Duran. Let's go do that. Let's do a decade of decadence investigating the FBI 2022 to 2012. We'll just go right from Operation Fast and Furious to the bugging of the Tea Party organizations to the letting in the guns from Sinaloa right up to the present day. And let's have a big investigation featuring a Truth and Reconciliation Committee. I think that's what we have to do. We've got to get down to the bottom of this. If we don't get down to the bottom of this, you're never going to have the confidence that you need to trust a major premier organization. And for goodness sakes, nobody of any goodwill wants to see any kind of violence carried out against any law enforcement officer, unless, of course, you're a radical Marxist leftist. Then you're okay with that, by and large, because past is prologue. 704-570-1110, News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. We got the Afghan withdrawal straight ahead, but first, Boomer Von Cannon with a look at the road. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. As the American people are turning towards a year ago and the horrible departure from Afghanistan, I wanted to bring somebody on who could really explain to us what this legacy is. He is Richard Weitz with the Hudson Institute. He's a senior fellow and director of the Center for Political Military Analysis at the Hudson Institute. And welcome to the program. I appreciate you being there, Richard.
Thank you so much for having me.
Talk a little bit about the long-term impact that we have seen 1 year removed.
Yeah, it's still not really clear. So some of the hopes we had about a benign outcome haven't occurred, but some of the worst fears haven't occurred either. So it's clear that the situation for the Afghan people is worse. Their economy is deteriorated. Their women are suffering. The Taliban is not adopted inclusive policies. On the other hand, they haven't been engaged in supporting attacks by terrorist groups in foreign countries, though we found that there are terrorists located there. This is the Al-Qaeda leader we recently killed. And diplomatically, they remain isolated. No, Russia, China have stayed away as well as the U.S. So it's a bit of a mixed picture, but the trends are in the negative. And so they're becoming harder line in recent months.
Has the Taliban government, has that government been seated at the United Nations?
No. So no foreign government has recognized the Taliban, which is unique. I mean, even when they were in power before, there were three that did.
Yeah.
And that doesn't appear to change. The way they treat their women is just so out of the mainstream, even for countries, you know, that we would consider authoritarian or having similar bad policies, that no one wants to take the opprobrium of dealing with them. So we've had to deal with a series of workarounds, providing aid through the UN or NGOs and meeting with them, but on an unofficial capacity and so on.
So here's what I'm struck by. So where are they getting their money at this point? Is it Pakistan that's giving them their money? I mean, I know that there are Western aid agencies that are plowing stuff in there, but Who's carrying the freight for these guys?
Well, they get some internal revenue through taxation, seizure of wealth of the former government. Narcotics exports continues in some areas, but they have a massive collapse in their government services, massive budget deficit, and other economic problems, primarily because they're not getting a lot. The U.S. has been very generous. We've given them $1 billion, but it's all gone through directly to various Afghan groups and stayed outside of the hands of the Taliban, as far as we know, and that's been comparable for others. And so far, the Taliban have allowed the UN, the aid groups, to deal directly with the beneficiaries, such as the recent earthquake, but that could change at any time.
Richard Weitz joining us. How do you assess the way the Zawahiri raid went down, we were questioning about whether or not we would be able to pull off over the horizon strikes, things like that. What's the takeaway from that, taking down that leader of Al Qaeda?
Yeah, that's a great question. So on the one hand, it shows that the U.S. retains intelligence assets in Afghanistan. They were able to identify him and basically just, you know when he was going to be on the balcony at a certain time so they could kill him and not kill anybody else. But the fact that he was there, the fact that there's only been one such strike in the past year, the fact that he was a particularly high-value target and maybe others are not making the same mistakes he did, still not certain how effective the over-horizon policy will be. We just have this one case. It was a good case. He was an important person to kill, symbolically at least, and it shows the U.S. can do it. But whether that would be enough if there was a more active terrorist movement from Afghanistan attacking the United States or other countries, that's when it's more questionable.
Richard Weiss joining us here from the Hudson Institute. So as you look at this, we know ISIS-K is still a question. We know the Haqqani network is still very active there as well. We know Al-Qaeda still has some form of a presence in there. What is the long-term prognosis as you look at this? I mean, are we going to get to a place where the Russians come back in and support this government or somebody else does? Or are we just going to turn the page onto a new chapter of the great game? What should the average American expect there in Afghanistan?
Right. So as it looks now, there are definitely international terrorist groups there. And you mentioned a couple. The UN says there are about 20 of them there. But so far, they've just been able to live there. Basically, they've gotten sanctuary, but they haven't launched operations in foreign countries. That could change. That's the big fear, I would think, if I were an American. The Russians, the Chinese, have actually, surprisingly, not changed their policies that much over the past year, despite all the changes in Afghanistan, worsening relations with the U.S. elsewhere. The Chinese have not invested heavily in the country for various reasons. The Russians have stayed away. You know, maybe they're distracted by Ukraine. But for whatever reason, it looks like Afghanistan is going to remain very isolated.
Yeah.
Most Americans won't deal with it unless they're very concerned, you know, with the people we work with who are still suffering there or women. But that could change pretty quickly if they decide to get back in the international terrorist business.
So there's the old adage that's been thrown around for years and years that the Taliban understood that we had the clocks, but they had the time to wait us out. Ultimately, what's the implication for our standing in the world? How does China view this? And I'm viewing them as our principal challenge in Asia.
Yeah, correctly. So, we thought the trends would be very bad, but Ukraine has sort of salvaged that. So because, the U.S. intelligence, U.S. military, U.S. political system, everything failed Afghanistan for all sorts of reasons. But Ukraine has shown that the U.S. can actually train a foreign military effectively. It can organize it in the diplomacy. It can organize and other instruments of power. So the thinking is the Chinese will pay hopefully more attention to the U.S. successes in Ukraine than the failures in Afghanistan.
Lot to take away. We appreciate you making time for us, Richard. Richard White, Senior Fellow and Director of the Center for Political Military Analysis. We appreciate your wisdom and would love to catch up with you again down the road, my friend.
Would love that. Thank you very much.
Anytime. That's Richard White's giving us a lot of good perspective. Anna Erickson's going to give us the news. What's going on, Anna? News Talk, 1110, 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterble Show. There is just so much stuff that is going on out there, and I want to get to every single bit of it. Some of the stuff that's happening, though, is really beyond explanation. This is a terrible story that came out as we were speaking about Afghanistan. Lance Corporal Kareem Nakui's brother reportedly killed himself a year later He is the brother of a Marine that was killed in Afghanistan during that horrible terrorist attack with the withdrawal. And now that young man killed himself at a memorial for his brother. The brother of a young Marine killed during the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan reportedly died by suicide a year later during a recent memorial service for the fallen service member. Lance Corporal Kareem Nakui, 20, from Norco, California, was one of the 13 American troops killed on August the 26th, 2021, when a suicide bomber detonated an explosive outside Kabul airport as crowds of Americans and Afghan allies sought to flee Taliban fighters taking over the capital city. Nearly a year later, Nakui's older brother, 28-year-old Dakota Halverson, died on August the 9th, a press release from the Riverside County Sheriff's Department in California confirmed. The older brother of one of the 13 KIA in Kabul recently killed himself at his little brother's memorial. That's according to Mike Waltz, a Republican from Florida, tweeting on Saturday, replying to a tweet by Town Hall reporter Julio Rosas. Please pray for his family. There must be accountability for the continued carnage. Now, why do you think it is that we had all these extensive hearings into any number of things, right? We've had extensive hearings into, parents protesting at schools, into gender issues, into January 6th, into Russia collusion, into all these things. But we really haven't done a deep, deep dive on the pullout in Afghanistan. Why was the president so hot to meet a buy date to get out of Afghanistan? And I understand it was a deal that was negotiated by Donald Trump. I get it. That's all been established. But what is it? What is it that forced us to get out at that exact moment in that exact chaotic way? To this day, I still don't understand it. I don't want to see another American soldier, airman, Navy personnel. I don't want to see a Marine lose their lives over in Afghanistan fighting for a war that we had no desire to win at the end of that fight. But man, I mean, once you got people out, and if you'd gotten them out in a much more orderly way, you know, as people smarter than I always thought, you know, why not just go take out those, go take out that air base at Bagram? Why not just take it out? Why not just level it and tell the Taliban, hey, you want to build something? Build it yourselves. We're not going to leave you with all of this stuff. But unfortunately, the reality was the Taliban was swallowing up territory for the better part of 7 and 8 months when they went into the final attack on Kabul. And you look at this and you say, what is that for? And this young man loses his life among the 13. And then his older brother takes his life because he's so despondent over what it was that happened. And still, it just doesn't make sense to me when you talk about these challenges that we're looking at. And you have challenges in places like Afghanistan, but you also have challenges in first world places. This is something I have been very interested in, and I've not been able to figure out where this is coming from. But this is out of the United Kingdom, out of Britain. Record UK ambulance calls last month saw the highest number of ambulance callouts for life-threatening conditions since records began. So in total history, there were more than 85,000 Category 1 calls for situations like cardiac arrests and people stopping breathing. The heat wave could have been one reason for increased demand, but experts say hospitals already face immense pressures. Nearly 30,000 patients waited more than 12 hours to be admitted to the hospital. Now, we know people who have had to wait extended periods of time to get into a hospital bed, to get into a hospital location. 30,000 in a year in the UK had to wait more than 12 hours to get into a hospital. That number is up 33% from the prior month. What is going on? At the end of July, 13,000 people were still in hospital beds despite being medically fit to be discharged. According to the latest figures, 6 out of 10 patients faced delays in being discharged from the hospital despite being ready to leave. So you've got a major country in the UK. It's a first world country. They're able to handle different challenges, but now you're stressing their hospital situation out. You have equal sort of stresses here in the United States. Remember what happened when people were yelling and screaming and carrying on about you are going to die in the winter of death. Remember the winter of death we were all going to suffer from with the COVID and everybody was going to die? And what was the president doing? He was encouraging people to fire workers, to fire the doctors and the nurses, to fire the people in the military, to fire the support personnel. I mean, you forget this, but it was Ron Klain, who's the White House chief of staff, running around saying, yeah, we can mandate these vaccines, and if they don't take them, they will be fired from their jobs, only to be told can't do it that way. The reason I bring this up is you don't think that like a bunch of nurses left the profession of nursing and doctors left the profession of medical care, do you, over in England? I bet they did. I'm willing to bet that, just like they did here. I've talked to people who say they can't get access to treatments in the timely way that they have sought to get access to treatments in the past, because just like when you go to the airlines and they don't have baggage handlers, and just like when you go to the airlines, they don't have gate attendants, and just like you go to the airlines, they don't have a pilot, just like you go to the airlines and you've got all those challenges. Every sector of our economies in the West is under stress because of the edicts of bureaucrats, the Fauchists. Well, you get the shot or you lose your job. Okay. So who's going to do that job? Where are those cops now? Well, they've left New York. Some of them have come to the Carolinas. Where do you go and get those people to do those jobs that you fire because it was jab or job? And they said, job, I'm out. 704-570-1110, News Talk 1110, 993 WBT. Boomer, how are we looking outside on the road? News Talk 1110, 993 WBT. I met one of our listeners on Sunday at my church. On Saturday night, I'm sorry, at my church. Alice said hello, and she's somebody who listens to the show all the time and likes WBT very, very much. So it was great to meet Alice. I got to chat with her for a couple of minutes, and it was outstanding. Let's chat now with Stan. Stan, welcome to the show.
Hi, Brad. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
So I have a question for you. Growing up, I loved, my favorite sports were football, baseball, basketball.
Yes.
And I found myself over the last 15 years or so migrating to where on Sundays now and the weekends, I'm watching golf and NASCAR. But some of the reasons that I kind of lost my appetite for those other three sports, I see starting to creep in to golf and NASCAR, and that is that they rely on corporate sponsors, but the fan base and the people who participate in the sport, their values aren't one and the same. And I wanted to ask you how you see that issue going forward, and where do you see the two sports going?
Well, look, sponsors are incredibly important, no matter what you're doing. Okay, so if you are operating a radio station, television station, a network, they are hugely important. Without sponsors, you're not able to do incredibly great programming and be able to do that. So that is a hugely important thing. And it's important to understand that, you know, everything that is created, that is made available out there, is at least in large measure driven by an ability to monetize what it is you're doing, right? People have to earn livings. Businesses have bottom lines to protect. Organizations like golf tours or NASCAR or MLB, you name it, they all have a bottom line to attend to, right? And remember, it's not just the sport, right? Because it's the venues, it's the arenas, it's the people that work at those arenas. I mean, you're talking about a substantial commitment in time. Now, I look at sports and sponsorship is inherently intertwined. Think of any stadium. There's one right here. I'm looking at it right now, and it has a certain name. It's branded by Bank of America, right? So that's right. A sponsorship. And when you talk about where did the game get played, where the Panthers won last night, you know, you say it's at B of A. They were playing at B of A. So that's why you do all that sort of stuff. You want to be able to then capitalize on that for the benefit of the attending fans and the people watching on TV as well, and the shareholders.
You have to walk that tightrope then and just make sure you don't kill the goose that laid the golden egg in the first place.
Well, so when you talk about seeing stuff creeping in golf and in NASCAR, and the reason why you're not watching those other three sports, is it too difficult to kind of process the sports absent the politics that may or may not be involved in it?
Yes. When the people are like, or the social justice, and when they're concentrating more on that kind of thing rather than the product they put on the field, which is what the fans show up for, I think it ruins it for a lot of people.
Do you feel that way when you attend the events live in person?
Somewhat, yes.
You do? Interesting.
Yes.
That's interesting. Because, like, anytime I've gone to the race over here, I'm usually pretty engrossed in the race. When you watch it on TV, it can be much more present, obviously.
Well, not as much, because you got the sound and all of that.
Yeah.
Now, I do want to ask you, like, two specific questions.
Yes.
About the sport itself. Okay, Kevin Harvick winning twice in 2 weeks.
Yes.
And then your Bush brothers.
Yes.
Kurt's got the concussion. And Kyle hasn't re-signed yet.
Yes.
And I was just wondering what do you think the future holds for them?
Well, with Kurt having the concussion issue that he's got, and it's now got into a number of weeks since he had that terrible crash, you know, he's going to have to be evaluated by his doctors, and you're not going to know whether or not he is going to have a career moving forward. We watched what happened with Dale Jr. After that plane crash. You know, it does cause you to reset and rethink, you know, what you're doing. Kurt's not 22 years old. He's a much older guy now, right? Watched him race for a lot of years. Kyle, I don't know what the future holds. There's a part of me, though, that thinks I maybe they'll end up together on some sort of a maybe they'll put a team together for themselves. I mean, I don't know if that would be the case, but that certainly could, I think, be an option for somebody if they wanted to pony up those dollars.
Yeah, I could see Kyle doing something like what Tony Stewart did.
Yeah. That's the thing. I mean, it's the realities of that business is much different for someone who's coming in at 18 or 19 or 20 to try to build a name for themselves than past champions, big careers behind them, still some maybe bright spots ahead. So, I mean, that's the question is, you know, how do you monetize it? How do you then put money up into it? And that's going to be the ultimate question, I think.
Oh, well, Brett, I do enjoy your show, and I appreciate it.
You got it, buddy. I appreciate it, Stan. I mean, you're a great call. I always like talking to Stan. Always. Michael, welcome to the show. Hello, Michael.
Hey, how's it going?
Going well. What's on your mind, sir?
I just wanted to ask you a quick question about the Mar-a-Lago raid and see if maybe you thought they went into Trump's house because the Jeffrey Epstein client list was somewhere in those documents.
I don't think that's probably what was at issue there. I think the FBI went in there for, you know, a reason that they wanted to see what was in those documents. But the client list, I don't know that Trump would have the client list. Here's the thing, as somebody pointed out, and I would love to give credit to it, but I don't remember who it was. Brett Jensen gave me a heads up on the tweet. And they said, the way you know that Donald Trump was not a customer or somebody who was participating with Jeffrey Epstein in that way with Ghislaine Maxwell is that you haven't seen that list then come out with his name on it. I mean, that's one of the things that you got to kind of digest. We got another great hour straight ahead. Bo Thompson comes by. Mark Garrison comes by. Plenty of room for you. News Talk 1110 993 WBT. News Talk 1110 993 WBT. It is the Brett Winterville Show, 704-570-1110. Shocked and disheartened. No, I'm not talking about a football team. Shocked and disheartened. That's how coal country is reacting to Manchin and the deal he cut with Joe Biden. Coal country still reeling from Senator Joe Manchin's decision to back a sweeping climate and energy package that's going to accelerate the nation's transition away from coal. Now, you know, as well as I do, that for a while, people were very into Joe Manchin. They were saying, okay, he is the guy. He is the one guy that can stop all the socialism that is coming our way. You know, we've got all these problems. And he was the guy who was standing there saying, no, we're not going to Green New Deal it. We're not doing it. We're not doing it. We're not doing it. And man, they did whatever it was that they had to do. I don't know what pictures they have of him in a saloon somewhere. Or I don't think that's really the case. I don't know how they got to him. How do you flip that script that quickly? In all seriousness, like I'm trying to think of a Republican that would flip that fast. I can think of like seven of them. Collins comes to mind. Your formerly beloved Romney comes to mind. Ben Sasse comes to mind. Murkowski comes to mind. I can see some of these people flipping very, very quickly because in some cases they're weather vane senators. But Manchin, I figured Manchin was solid. I thought he was going to hold that line, but he didn't. He didn't. And so now the people in his state are mad. By the way, you know when he's up for re-election? 2024. And the rumor is he doesn't care because he's not going to run again. Or he's counting on those people in the mountain state to say, we forgot about it. We're going to do what he was trying to do something good for us. And, you know, we wanted to get some free teeth. We wanted to maybe get some free toenail clipping, whatever it is. You know, he was going to hook us up with some of the stuff. There is nothing free. There is nothing free in the economy. And here's the problem. The Europeans are proof positive that this schemey stuff that's happening is not going to work. How do we know? We told you on Friday, they're foraging for firewood. They're foraging for firewood in Germany. Do you see what's happening? The rivers are low in Germany. The French are trucking water in. And they all got rid of what? The fossil fuels and the natural gas. And they said, we're going to rely on the Ruskies to hook us up and set us up. Are you kidding me? You're going to rely on Putin for your fuel supply while at the same time you're sending aid over to the folks in Ukraine? And I mean, I feel very badly for the people in Ukraine, but we're not dependent on Russian natural gas. And so you have Manchin coming in here and saying, okay, we can do it. I remember on multiple occasions, because I was in the studio on the other side of the glass, and I remember on multiple occasions that Rush would say, America cannot do socialism better than everybody else because socialism fails. Socialism fails. You can have all the money in the world, and if you try it, eventually you go broke. You run out of OPM. And now Manchin greenlights that bill that deploys 87,000 revenue agents coming for you because there's not that many billionaires or millionaires to shake down. So by definition, Joe Manchin greenlit the targeting of the average taxpayer, the small business owner, the LLC, the subchapter S. And for whatever reason, and I can't figure it out, you know, you can't. you can't cut these deals. I mean, that's what we're talking about here, folks. This is a mess. This is a mess that we've got. And unfortunately, it's not going to be limited to like one state or one place. You know, it's just not that way. You can't say, well, you know, stupid California, you guys want to do all this crazy stuff with your $20,000 garbage cans, and you in New York, you want to be so dumb that you let all the derelicts just take over the subways, and people are going to the bathroom in the streets, and that's a uniquely New York problem, and that's a California problem, or this is a Chicago problem. This bill that we're talking about now, this bill is bad for all of us. Jamie Dimon, I was reading that article to you just in the last 25, 30 minutes. Jamie Dimon, that is a full-grown banker guy. He could be the chairman of the Fed. I mean, he's a guy who everybody takes his phone calls because he's regarded as a serious, sober-minded guy. Okay, so he's a little bit on the liberal side, but he is a serious, sober-minded guy. He's telling people, You can't scrap all of America's energy in the hopes that AOC is going to concoct something for you that's going to work. It's not that way. This is not a movie. There is no cavalry riding to our rescue for prosperity. We're going to end up hobbling ourselves. And mark my words, with what Manchin did here, nobody's going to take responsibility. And when this stuff all goes to you know what? The answer is going to be the thing that they say to you every time. And you should be so mad when you hear them say it. You know what they're going to say? System failed. Who knew? Who knew we couldn't produce enough solar to power our economy? Who knew? Who knew? And oh, by the way, the stuff is just out of control. I mean, it,
4700.
News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. It's that time of the day where we cross the streams AM, PM, PM, and AM. Always happy to catch up with Bo Thompson. Good to have you back, Bo.
Good afternoon.
You know, there's a lot of stuff going on out there. You know, there's... We got any number of political sort of machinations and things. We've got the continuation of the delivery of migrants into New York City and other blue city areas as well. And then, of course, let's not forget the ongoing outrage on Mar-a-Lago. Now, the Mar-a-Lago thing, as you look at this, Bo, do you think this thing is going to die down over a period of time? Or do you think, given what may happen tomorrow in Wyoming, this thing may flare up again?
Well, tomorrow is going to be interesting on a number of levels. I mean, obviously, everybody's sort of waiting to see what happens with Liz Cheney, although I don't think there's a whole lot of suspense to that one. If you look at the polls, I think we know what's going to happen. But I keep seeing the stories. It's the end of her political career, but it's the beginning of her political career. You know, it's the end of one era and the beginning of what she hopes that she can parlay this into, and maybe what it's been about from the beginning anyway with her. You know, this springboard into some other figure within the Republican Party or faction of the Republican Party. But you know, that's the race that we sort of know what's going to happen. I'm fascinated by the Sarah Palin race in Alaska too, because I don't mean to turn it back around on you for a second.
No, go ahead.
But I'm curious when Sarah Palin burst onto the stage back when she was chosen as McCain's running mate all those years ago.
Right.
You know, you and I didn't know each other back then, but we were both in radio.
Mm-hmm.
Did you think that was the beginning of her rise into years and years of influence within the party, or did you see in the beginning did you believe that she would sort of flame out at some point the way that she has?
Well, I think she got overexposed, and I know that sounds crazy because someone who runs for vice president, it's like, how could you possibly be overexposed? Well, I think she got overexposed I think that the people that were inside that campaign were brutal to her, and I think didn't give her the right sort of advice in terms of approaching things. I don't know that she was going to be willing to take it, but she really did, in some ways, define what the ultimate what the Tea Party movement would ultimately kind of coalesce around, right? Because she runs in 2008. She's the governor of Alaska. Of course, everybody's calling her a ditz and names and things like that. But she harnessed that energy and that power, I think, to launch her onto the national stage. And then you know, you kind of get overexposed. You've got the, you know, this show, that show. You're doing a thing with your kids and your husband. And, you know, at that point, it's like, do you want to be famous for being famous? Or do you want to be famous for being a politician?
Well, and look, she's not nearly as media savvy as Donald Trump. I think we can all agree on
that's
that.
That's true.
But she does have a degree of the same sort of, yeah, people have a certain fascination with her and her celebrity, which it's a different thing than it was for a while there. But, you know, if she wins tomorrow, mm-hmm. then I wonder what she ends up becoming, because she certainly has an incredible following and name recognition that you know, like her or not, that few people in the Republican Party have. I mean, she's a former VP candidate. So when you talk about, like, to me, she's really in a unique spot, because if she wins this tomorrow, or at least as I understand it, if she wins, then she becomes the person who fills out Don Young's spot, right?
And correct.
In the seat. But then she also, on the same ballot, this is also a primary on the same ballot where she would become the nominee into the next cycle. So whatever she ends up doing, if she is successful tomorrow, I'm curious, because I don't know about you, but I assume she was done. And
well,
if she can somehow parlay this into a second coming, she has some of the characteristics as far as celebrity rise to fame, reality shows, and with her it's been after the fact, whereas with President Trump it was before the fact. But I do believe there's a fascination with some people about her that in some ways is Trumpian.
Well, here's what I would say about this. Like anything else, let's use broadcasting, because we both are in broadcasting and we have a certain amount of experience in broadcasting. And you think back to the earliest days of you being on the air and some of the things that you're worried about, right? You're worried that you don't fill every moment with a word. You don't have the pacing down that you have today. When you start out, you know, you're pacing in a different way. You're talking in a different way. And now you're comfortable with a pause. You're comfortable with kind of going off into another tangent and then coming back, things like that. That's very much what she had, right? Because she comes in, she was the governor of Alaska, but she was unknown to the world. She goes onto the scene, she takes a lot of beatings, has a lot of crashes, has a lot of issues, and then comes back. And this is now, 14 years later. 14 years later since she ran for the vice presidency of the United States. And let's be honest, she gave a pretty good shot at Biden when he was taking her on in that one debate. She didn't burst into tears and run from the stage embarrassed. She held her own and stood her ground, and she built upon that over time. And I think that's just the seasoning that happens with people doing anything as a job: sales, a doctor, a lawyer, a professional football player. You know, over the years of experience, you get much more confident in your game and what you're doing. And I think that's where she is now.
I think you're exactly spot on. The question is I guess we're all, few people get a chance like this to sort of reset things.
Yes.
But if she wins and she has that second chance to sort of re-galvanize what she is,
yep.
That she's got the following, not the same following, the
right.
same type of following in some ways that Trump did. And she probably took some notes on how he, I mean, look, Donald Trump is who he is, and he doesn't care. He's very confident in who he is.
Correct.
And that was never a problem for her before. But you're right. She was sort of, you know, she wasn't fine-tuned before. So
that's right.
I'm not saying that I believe that she's going to be. I'm saying that I'm very curious to see what version 2.0 is if she wins.
If she wins and Cheney loses, you're still going to see all the attention on Cheney. And that's not necessarily bad for Palin, because she can keep her powder dry till she gets into the Congress itself.
Agreed.
And then she was a lot of those folks before they were those folks, and I think that's what it comes down to. So
I didn't mean to turn this into a Palin segment.
I thought it was great.
I'm more interested. To me, Palin's a more intriguing story than Cheney is tomorrow, because I know what's going to happen to Cheney, right?
Sure. And the press is going to tell you how much they're afraid of Sarah Palin by the way they butcher her on MSNBC and CNN. You will be able to know immediately if they're not ignoring her. If they're not ignoring her, you're going to see them butchering her.
That's right.
That's my guess. What do you got coming up on the show tomorrow with Bo on Good Morning BT? Beth on Good Morning BT.
I'm solo tomorrow. Beth will be back on Thursday. And Brett Jensen will be in for us on Wednesday. But for tomorrow, we've got Teresa Payton, Dr. Robert Thompson. We'll talk to Tim Boyum about this Wyoming and also Alaska race. And Brett Jensen will be with me in the final 2 hours. First time he's been back in studio with me in the morning since his Indiana Jones trip. So we're going to recap it all.
And I understand he's bringing in a slideshow for you guys in the studio for people to check out.
Yeah, it's because it's radio.
It's magic. Thanks, Bo Thompson. Appreciate you, man.
All right, man.
Yeah, you take care. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show, 704-570-1110. Great to be here with you. So we had that huge storm that took place on Friday night, and I was at my house on Friday night. I made the drive, and I couldn't believe, first of all, I'm not calling anybody specifically out because I don't know who it was, but if you were driving in that hell storm, rainstorm, that had hail in it at some point, and you were doing like 70 in an SUV, like you need to not drive that fast. Like, that is too fast in blinding rain. And that's all I'm going to say. You can disagree. I'm not going to take calls on that, because I think you should not speed in blinding rain. I think that's a mistake. Wherever you're going, you're a fool if you're driving at 70 miles an hour in that kind of rain. So when I got back to my place and I got all squared away, the rainbows were showing and things were happening, and you know, the sort of stuff that you'd want to have happen. You know, you're just kind of sitting back. It's a Friday night. It's time to chill. It's a good time to be doing the things that you got to do. Then all of a sudden, guess what? I had an air conditioning unit issue. That's right. The air conditioning unit went sideways on me, and I thought, oh gosh, I got to get the air conditioning unit serviced. I gotta do something about this. It's gotta happen. What am I gonna do? Well, then something else happened. That thing that's mounted on the side of the wall that's got the circuit breaker in it, or whatever that thing is, the fuse in it, it blew like a cherry bomb. And I went, oh, this is bad. I gotta do something about this. This is horrible. It's the worst thing ever. So I was like freaking out. So Saturday morning, I said, you know, I'm going to call some guys, have them come look at it. So the air conditioning guy came and looked at it and said, yeah, you need an electrician to look at these wires, because these wires look like they're fried. And I started making phone calls, and I couldn't find anybody to come and take a look at this unit and figure out what was going on at my house, what had happened, whatever, until I met a great guy named Joe, who's over at Pyramid Electric, and he came by and he looked at this and he said, dude, you got hit by lightning. And I said, no, I didn't get hit by lightning. I feel fine. I don't have superpowers now. I don't have like X-ray vision. I don't have any of that kind of stuff. He said, no, that's not what it is. He said, you got hit by lightning. There's a lightning strike that came in and hit you there at the place. And I said, I didn't smell anything. I didn't see anything. I didn't. He goes, it came through the grass. Because it came through the grass and it went boom right there into the box, and the box acted the way it's supposed to act, which is it shoots the fuse out of the box. And guess what? He said, you have to do something here with these wires. So you know what he did? He came in, helped me out, got me back online, And the rest is history. But you know what was so interesting? We had a very long conversation, and he was a former police officer in New York City, and we were talking about police work and the challenges we face. And what I thought was so interesting about Joe over at Pyramid was he said, you know what position in law enforcement needs to be taken much, much, much more seriously? He said, you see what happened at Uvalde? School resource officers need to be respected. They need to be paid properly. It should not be a final destination for a cop that's on their way moving out of the force into retirement. It ought to be a full-time assignment that allows mobility upwards, where you can get promoted and where you can really specialize in doing this sort of stuff. And it was such an amazing conversation. He was such an easy guy to talk to, and he was able to help me out with what happened with the wiring and the blow and all that sort of stuff that took place. And it was remarkable. And you got to understand something here. I love the people I get to meet in my daily life here in Charlotte and around the area. I love the people I get to meet, the entrepreneurs, the people with big ideas and great ideas, because when you start talking one-to-one with folks, like I did with Joe, what you end up having in that case is connectivity. You get that connectivity, and you get to look at the issues that are out there affecting all of us. People have really good ideas. People with experience in life have really good ideas, and that's the difference between politicians who practice the theoretical and come up with these things that are fanciful, written by lobbyists, proposed by college professors that have never really worked in the real world. It's when you talk to those folks, especially the people who have worked in law enforcement in a variety of locations and who understand the challenges we face, it gets granular really, really fast. So I owe a debt of thanks to Joe for coming by my place and looking and helping us resolve some of these issues. But I'm very appreciative for getting his wisdom in understanding what it is that we need to do in this country to get people feeling safe again and to get our kids learning in a proper environment. It was really a remarkable conversation. So thank you very much to Joe from Pyramid. An absolutely great conversation. News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT, Brett Winterbull Show, and it is time to check in with Mark Garrison for Charlotte at 6.
Indeed. After hearing that promo with Bo, I feel kind of badly. I haven't been thinking about my show for 10 years.
That's true.
Oh, have you ever heard of drip fees?
No.
It's the extra charges we're all paying now because of COVID or inflation. Your furniture delivery's got an extra fuel charge. Hotels charge a COVID cleaning fee. Your Uber ride has an inflation fee. So the Better Business Bureau now saying, don't put up with it. We'll talk about what you can do about it.
So that's where all the money's going. Okay.
That's right.
Wow.
Let's see here. Speaking of COVID, back to normal for area schools. No masking, no social distancing. Central Piedmont open today. It's interesting. Local employers want CP to turn out everything from truck drivers to mechanics in a hurry and construction workers because there are so many job openings.
Wow.
President Trump, you've probably talked about this some, says the FBI took his passports when he was raided last week, even one that expired.
It's unbelievable.
Maybe somebody's going to sell it on eBay, right?
That's right.
And then at 6:35, Anna's here on a Monday with the strange news of the week.
How strange can it be? We'll find out.
Pretty strange, I think.
That's it.
All right.
All right, my friend, I'm looking forward to it.
Thanks, sir.
You got it. That's Mark Garrison, Charlotte at 6, coming up in just a little bit. Brett Jensen will be back, by the way, in the 7 o'clock hour to keep you all company and informed and all that sort of stuff, which is outstanding and great as well. There's a lot of other stuff that's happening out there in addition to some of this. This was a surprising story for me. Some Capitol rioters are trying to profit from their January 6th crimes. Have you heard about this? This is weird. Facing prison time and dire personal consequences for storming the U.S. Capitol, some January 6th defendants are trying to profit from their participation in the deadly riot, using it as a platform to drum up cash, promote business endeavors, and boost social media profiles. One Nevada man, jailed on riot charges, asked his mother to contact publishers for a book he was writing about the Capitol incident. a rioter from Washington State, helped his father hawk clothes and other merchandise bearing slogans such as, quote, "Our House," and images of the Capitol building. A Virginia man released a rap album with riot-themed songs and a cover with a photograph of him sitting on a police vehicle outside the Capitol. That's like an admission of what you did. It's like, yeah, I was there, and here's my picture, and buy my album. You know, the FBI probably bought a copy and said, okay, here's the case. Just transcribe those rap lyrics. He's probably talking about what he did. DJ Jazzy House.
DaBaby.
No, it wasn't DaBaby. I made that up. I don't know if it's DJ Jazzy House. DJ Pelosi. No, that's not right. DJ Pelosi? What? What would a Pelosi rap album sound like? Give me a beat. Give me a beat, DJ. I bet I could do it. I bet I could do a Nancy Pelosi rap album. Oh, no, I bet I could do it. That's absolutely right. You know, she'd be all like, well, I'm the lady of the house, and let's get it straight. You all can sit back and try to hate, but I'm saving this nation one day at a time, and you're just jealous because I can rhyme. I just did that off the top of my head. No lessons. No lessons. The actions are sometimes complicating matters for defendants when they face judges at sentencing, as prosecutors point to the profit-chasing activities in seeking tougher punishments. There's a reason why D.B. Cooper didn't open up D.B. Cooper's cookies after he D.B. Coopered the money out of the plane. Okay? There's a reason why, you know, Dillinger didn't go, come on in for Dillinger's delights. In every cake, we put a file. I mean, you can't do that kind of, you're not supposed to do it that way. You're doing it wrong. You have to either be straight up hardened criminal, or you have to be an entrepreneur. But if you try to mix the two of them, well, Suge Knight might get mad. I mean, I don't know.
DaBaby.
Excuse me. It's not DaBaby. It's not DaBaby. But the fact of the matter is, in one case, federal authorities have seized tens of thousands of dollars from a defendant who sold his footage from January 6th. In another case, a Florida man's plea deal allows the U.S. government to collect profits from any book he gets published over the next 5 years, and prosecutors want a Maine man. It's not like they're trying to get a regular date. It's a man from Maine. It's not, I need a Maine man. Hey, will you be my Maine man? Are you DaBaby? Here's a question. A Maine man who raised more than $20,000 from supporters, they want him to surrender some of the money because a taxpayer-funded public defender is representing him. So you've got these people with angles, and unfortunately, it's not going to work out for them. These guys are going to face time, and I think what's going to end up happening, to be honest with you, is the judges are going to go a little harder on them because they think it's a joke and they can make some money off the deal. All right, coming up next, you got Charlotte at 6. Thank you to TJ and Tommy, Anna and Boomer, Mark Garrison, Bo Thompson, and each and every one of you. Now, remember, Charlotte at 6 is next, then Breaking Brett Jensen, then we get into the overnight hours, and anything is possible come daybreak. 704-570-1110. You can call it, but I'm not here. News Talk 1110-993-WB2.
Doesn't it make you feel better? The pigs have won tonight. They can all sleep soundly, and everything is alright.
DaBaby, DaBaby.